and welcome to the Old Time Radio Hour. I'm your host, Justine Ward, and each week we bring you a classic show from radio's golden age. This week we celebrate Memorial Day with a lighthearted comedy and a sincere tribute to the soldiers who gave their lives in service to their country. First, we have a program from the Armed Forces Radio Service. It's a heartfelt tribute to the many Americans who lost their lives fighting World War II. If they hadn't given their all, the world would be a very different place today. This is the Memorial Day program titled How Sleep the Brave, first broadcast May 31st, 1948 on AFRS.
The Armed Forces Radio Service takes pride in presenting a special Memorial Day program starring Mr. Lou Ayres.
How sleep the brave, who sink to rest by all their country's wishes blessed?
For a special occasion, this special program, the Armed Forces Radio Service, the voice of information and education, presents How Sleep the Brave.
The brave who sleep will now identify themselves.
Private James, infantry.
Corporal John, United States Marine Corps.
Second Lieutenant George, Air Force.
Seaman Second Class Ralph, United States Navy.
Me? I'm one of the cloak and dagger boys. You know, security and so forth. So just put me down as OSS.
Private Paul, Medical Department.
Sergeant Jack, Infantry. Do you think it's strange that these men gave no last names? They have them, to be sure. Their name is Legion, since they speak not only for themselves, but for counted others. In this story are other names, too. Faraway places. Places which will forever remain a part of America because these men were there. A date on the calendar called Memorial Day has been set aside to honor those fallen in war. But the simple truth is that they are with us always, in our minds, in our hearts, in our quiet moments alone, when memory turns back. And yet on this particular day, it is altogether fitting and proper that we talk about them. So the moment is now at hand to tell how sleep the brave. Private James, Infantry.
The bomb that had my name with others on, it was the very first to break our world apart that Sunday as I sat alone to write to Helen back in Little Falls.
Hi there, Jimmy. What are you doing?
Hello, Larry. Oh, nothing much, I guess.
A bunch of us are going down to Waikiki. What about coming along?
No, I guess not, but thanks. I gotta write a letter.
Helen, huh?
Yes. You know how a girl is. A million and one questions.
Yes. Give her my love.
Will do.
Well, take it easy. See you later.
December 7th, 1941. Well, that's funny. What's going on? The Japs allowed me time to write the date and dearest Helen. Ever since, I've hoped whoever picked me up destroyed unread her letter I had taken out to put me in the proper mood to answer all the silly questions girls can ask a man. At Schofield Barrack Cemetery, island of Oahu, is where my name now marks a cross of white. Not all December 7 guys are here. Alava, Mokapu, Nuuwana are the other places on Oahu. On Kauai, there is Makaveli. At Hilo, Homolani. And on Maui, Makavao. From time to time, they brought more guys. A fact that told us Uncle Sam was finishing the scrap we didn't know had started, and the bomb with our names on it fell on Pearl.
Corporal John, United States Marine Corps. When I was back at Haley Junior High, the dots of Wake and Guam connected lines that traced the China Clipper's path across from Frisco west to Oriental ports.
Hey, Johnny, why are we turning down this street for? I thought you were going to the movies with me.
Well, I am, but I want to stop at Worldwide Tours for a minute, huh?
Doggone it, the prices will change by the time we get to the movie if we stop there.
Oh, come on, Walt, we'll make it all right. It'll only take a minute.
Oh, all right, then. Now, what are you going to Worldwide Tours for? That's a travel agency. You're not going anywhere.
Well, they've got a new map in the window. They're giving it away.
A map? I might have known it. What do you see in an old map, anyway?
Oh, I don't know. I guess I just like looking at the names of places all over the world. Someday I'm going to see them, too. You just wait.
Boy, what a pipe dream. All right. Come on. Now, let's hurry. You and your old maps.
I love the sound of any far-off name. This could be reason now this time to think I signed with Uncle Sam's Marines in 1939. Except that life was fun, I've no regrets. When Wake was taken, it was taken high, over our dead bodies, you might say. Although the next 4 years were bitter, lying here, not knowing whether people knew or cared. They came at last with stuff the like we never thought to see. Oh, baby, how we could have used all that in 41. A few more got it, winning back our loss, and lie here with us now on Peacock Point. It's our son, Agat, and Agana, over there on Guam. Just kids who hated school in 41 and skipped geometry for news on what was cooking far away on those two dots, connecting lines the China Clippers flew from Frisco west to Oriental ports.
Private First Class Robert, Infantry.
We didn't want to credit rumors of assaults across the California shore, or tales that we were making final stand along the Mississippi's eastern bank. But even things we knew were true by day were not quite true at night here on Bataan. Delaying action is a phrase they use to hide what all the men who fought it know, that we were licked and wouldn't say it till our bodies wouldn't take us where we'd go. And over on Corregidor, our fall was harbinger of a dark and bloody spring that many would not see, or having seen, would wish through endless nights that they had not. A handful, hardier than most, survived to breathe in sweetness of another spring when prison doors swung wide and parachutes were bursting into bloom above the rock. The rest of us had dreams of such a day, but could not live on dreams alone, and so we died with them. A triumph must be bought with something, which is why we have new comrades on Luzon.
From Santa Barbara, where many lie, you travel south to reach Manila, where two cemeteries have been set apart for many more. Still south for 40 miles will bring you to Batangas, worth a day before embarking on a winding course 200 south by eastern miles to where some others sleep on Leyte and Palo, below Tacloban on San Pedro Bay. Private Harold, United States Marine Corps.
I don't suppose the higher echelons were wise to all the things we said about the brains it took to figure out that here was just the place to show the Japs how far they were from San Francisco Bay. A stranger might have misinterpreted as mutinous or worse our comments on the flora and the fauna that were all we had a surplus of. We even chopped the name in half and christened it Canal. In spite of these and other nuisances, like nights so black that jungle day seemed bright, The fight had some resemblance to the kind the books had warned us of.
All right, you boots. Let's be at ease here. No more obstacle courses and road hikes for a while. What we're getting into now is the real payoff stuff. Sergeant Ashbrook here is just back from the forward areas, and he's going to tell you what you'll run into when you get over there by yourself. If you're smart, you'll listen to every word he says. You won't find this stuff in no books or field manuals, because it ain't been written yet. Out there, the guys are learning the hard way. They try something. If it don't work, they try something else. If it does, they keep on using it, because it's right. What you're going to learn now, a lot of guys ain't around anymore to tell about. So listen. All right, Sergeant, you take over from here.
Okay. Okay, men, it's like the sergeant here says. So one of the first things you got to learn is that when you're in a spot...
The rest became new chapters and new books to tell new guys how we'd done it on canal before we died. So each could go on doing what we'd found was right until he made some new mistake that wasn't in the books and found his private piece of earth as we found ours. And be content that fading sounds of strife were from the right direction, telling him the Japs were farther than before from San Francisco Bay.
The cemetery on Carinian is called the Coral Sands. Nearby, Japtan is where the other dead of any Waytalk Atoll lie. At Kwajalein, it's Ivan Island, and another known as Enilabigan. Majuro Atoll has an island called Pagarian. The Marianas north of Guam have Tinian and Saipan. Anangwa in the Palau group, the cemetery's name is Pleasant Grove. And there's another on Peleliu. New Zealand treasures Waikumete Cemetery, and another at Kaori, Wellington. The Fiji Islands have a Suva Island. In the Gilberts, Lone Palm Cemetery is on Betio Island. Tarawa, not far from Gate of Heaven Cemetery, Tari Tari, and the one called Sleepy Lagoon on Lauratai. Second Lieutenant George, Air Force.
We fly guys never could be sure to find a resting place beneath a cross or star. And I was one who wrestled dead controls, fought off red tinted dizziness to keep my name from joining guys who'd gone before and had it, and were listed missing over Germany. I won, if winning is the sight through one good eye of friendly cliffs, and then the homing strip that twisted crazily beneath the nose. I speak for us who had it, but got back. For all the others who did not get back. And those who almost had it, but not quite. The lucky ones can never hope to call at all the scattered places where we lie. And any list is bound to miss the spots of earth or water where the missing fell. But here are several names that once were in official letters, read in quiet living rooms.
Southwest of London, 30 miles, is Brookwood Hill, and Cambridge Town is 50 miles the other way. Across a narrow sea is Lisnabrini at Belfast, while smaller grounded squadrons wait for flying weather out of Corsica, Gibraltar, Athens, Budapest, Belgrade, or Vise, off Yugoslavia's western coast. Or Sweden's Malmö, Munsingen southwest of Bern in Switzerland. Or Lisbon, Portugal, Sofia, Oslo, and a spot northwest of Bucharest. Seaman Second Class Ralph, United States Navy.
Unless you love the sea, you'll never know why I had pondered long the wish to share in death its endless motion as I had in life, and thought how dull must be a grave on land that never knows a change of scene except the slow parade of seasons in a year. And so I never worried much when we were dishing out the heavy stuff that meant reply could be expected with the same. Our wagon's luck was good until one dawn a gunner miles away was luckier. The old ship staggered like a boxer tagged, but quickly gained her feet, though I did not, to strike back angrily with snarling flame. That afternoon, when deck and sea were calm, we lay beneath the drapery that told why we had died, as chaplains quietly intoned the office of each man's belief, commending souls to his redeeming hands, committing flesh to rest within his sea.
Sergeant Jack, Quartermaster Corps. The stateside papers regularly had us cursing at the news they didn't print about those places where the war was not a thing that fitted into headlines or a bulletin compressing facts about a beachhead storm, directing readers to the full-page pictures sent by radio. There was very little you could say when letters told you they were glad you weren't in danger and congratulated you upon your luck before they quoted from the latest thrilling one from so-and-so, a boy who's really in the war. You learn to write around the dreary chores or hide a lack of them beneath a day-by-day recital of the weather where you were. Hey, Earl! Come here a minute.
Hi, Jack. What do you want?
Hey, what's this I hear about Benny getting hurt?
Well, Benny's dead.
Dead? What happened?
Well, he was driving into town. His truck ran off the road on that sharp curve. Broke his neck.
Gee, I hate to hear that. I like Benny.
Yeah, everybody did.
He's always trying to get transferred so he can get in on the fighting. Figured he wasn't doing anything here. Now look. Well, I guess when you get it, it doesn't matter how. You're dead.
Yeah, you can say that again. Well, I'll see you later, Jack.
When you died in one of many ways a soldier can, no matter where he is, you wondered if they'd say your luck had been too good to last. Private Paul, Medical Department.
Some law or other specified our role, forbidding us by any act to aid the cause we served, except as binding up the wounds of battle can be counted such.
Say, Elias, you're good at this first aid. Suppose a guy gets shot in the leg. Where's the pressure point so you can put on a tourniquet?
I'll show you, Paul. Right here. No, just a little higher. Yeah, right there, that's it.
Oh, yes, that's right. I remember, though. All this stuff about first aid and splints is okay, but when are we going to learn how to handle a gun?
Medics don't handle guns.
What?
Well, the Geneva Convention doesn't allow medical corpsmen to carry arms. And that's why I asked to be assigned to the medics.
I don't get it.
Well, you see, Paul, according to my religious faith, war is contrary to the spirit of the gospel. And that's why I could never bear arms against anyone.
For some, this was an easy cross to bear, whose conscience, higher than the law, would not permit their hands to rise in wrath for any man or cause. The guys like me, assigned by chance to be a combat medico, this ban was often an irritation when the blood was high and we could only do what we were trained to do and hope it was enough. Die.
Staff Sergeant Francis, Infantry.
The Rhine, that April day, lay to our rear, much closer on the map than in our minds, that looked already back upon the day we crossed it, as one does to some event emerging brightly from the mist of youth. But most of us admitted sweating out an unfamiliar dread of luck that might not stretch quite far enough to take us through. Turned out, mine was meant to snap so near the end that on the night of victory, my squad could drink a toast to me by name. So now, there's time enough to think about the path we blasted all across the map when we were buying battle streamers in a market where the price was always high. For one who knew his history of Rome, this bitter fighting should have been no great surprise. When you consider we were on the self-same ground from time to time, in Africa, then up the boot past Rome, across contested seas to France, where we could join the last assault on Germany. This vague itinerary is not meant to help you guess what shoulder patch I wore, but If it pleases you to think it was a certain one, don't look to me for proof.
Iran and Casablanca lead the role when talk gets round to northern Africa. Coronia in Sicily, between Messina and Palermo, shelters men who fell for both, while some are left as if Palermo still were threatened from the sea. The price of Naples can be counted by a walk in Naples where new graves are laid. Cassino was a treasure paid for by the men who lie a few miles south of it. At Fratelli and Mazzanello Nuovo, Salerno's ransom is at Avellino to the north and Mount Soprano to the south. Include Carano, Bari, Mirandola, and Falonica, Lettuno south of Rome, Tarquinia to the north, and south from Florence lie the men of Castel Fiorentino, Pietramala, and of Vada, 16 miles below Leghorn. St. Michael's Cemetery is 3 miles from Cagliari of Sardinia. Security and so forth. So just put him down as OSS.
We're getting pretty close to where you jump. All set?
Yes, all set.
You know something? You ought to be wearing one of those long black capes.
Like something right out of the opera, is that it?
Yeah. Well, here we are. So long, fella. Happy landing.
The only thing about this mission I disliked was knowledge that my failure to return would be a veil to hide my fate forever from the people who should know. But even this could not put down my high excitement as I dropped into the pit of night and listened, after the parachute was open, to the fading motors of the plane, remembering the pilot's grin and good luck sign, already like a vision from the past. Whatever ground it was that rose to meet my groping feet, you may be sure it gave me all the cloak and dagger stuff that I'd been itching for. My grave is marked by archives set apart in secret files, in secret hearts.
Staff Sergeant Edward, Infantry.
In June, 8 years before D-Day, the coast of Normandy was perfect for a lad who yesterday had cycled with his friend through quiet villages to reach the shore. We spent the afternoon in walks along the beach and up the gentle rises where the grass was soft to lie in while we talked of next year's school and what the chances were for sweet revenge on Dartmouth in the fall. And nothing in the breezes told of time, when planners poring over secret maps would designate this beach as Omaha and mark as Utah one just down the way. I thought that dawn in June when I was older, as I fell, of all this company my luck is best, to have beloved earth where I can rest.
A quiet legion half surrounds Saint Lô. Le Chenguerin is to the south, Marigny 9 miles west. The north approach is guarded by Le Cam, with Saint Laurent a few miles north and east, and Cherbourg has its patient sentries north and south at Bloville and Saint Marie-Glise. Southeast of Reims is Champigneur. Gouron is 12 miles past Saint James, northeast of Reims. Solaire and Villeneuve-sur-Auvergne are south of Paris, roughly 20 miles, and Sainte-Croix is northeast, 9 miles from Le Mans. The cost of rolling up the eastern side of France is told in graves along the way. At Draguignan, due west from sunny Cannes, Luynes above Marseille, at Saint-Jean, northeast of Besançon, Varois above Dijon, the land around Nancy that takes in Épinal, Andilly, Ligny, and Grandfailly above Verdun. And Hochfelden, a tiny place not shown on maps, not far above Strasbourg, and at Saint-Arbour that lies due east of Metz.
Christmas Eve was white as any we had dreamed out loud about for days in song. Our stockings all were hung with care to dry in warding off the curse of trench foot that had thinned our ranks as much as hostile fire. For we were none too many as it was, considering the job that lay ahead. To stick it out here at Bastogne until relief we prayed was on the way had come. I did not wish for death, of course. But when it came, I knew it hardly could have chosen better night than anniversary of time these self-same stars looked down to witness at thy birth. Jesus, Lord, at thy birth.
For all its valor, Belgium never was the host of better guests than lie at Foy, 4 miles above Bastogne, or those around Liège, at Fos, Henri-Chapelle, and Neuville-en-Condroux. The Hollanders are quiet as they tend the graves at Molenhoek, in Zoon, northeast of Eindhoven, or west of Aachen, where Margrotten is. The town of Ham is 2 miles east of Luxembourg. Private First Class Clarence, Infantry.
My service record, filed in Washington, with all the others marked deceased, will show my birth and home to be New Mexico. This fact gives point to something otherwise of no significance, except to me. The very day I fell and did not rise to see the long-awaited sunset of Japan, some men were huddled in my native soil to watch a man-made sun light up my sky with blinding dawn that made New Mexico the birthplace of a newer world.
The men who keep eternal watch on Iwo Jima lie where each of 3 divisions chose a billet for its own. And small as Ieshima and Zamanishima are, there's room to hold the men who died to win them from a stubborn, hidden foe. And 5 division cemeteries are deployed with strategy to hold the Okinawa hills. How sleep the brave who sink to rest by all their country's wishes blessed.
This special Memorial Day program, How Sleep the Brave, starred Lou Ayres as narrator and was adapted for radio by David B. Eskind from a blank verse poem written by Joseph A. Bordeaux. Supporting players in the order of their appearance were Bob Bruce, Tony Barrett, Bud Widham, Gene Reynolds, Blake Lanham, Clayton Post, Terry Bartell, Bruce Buell, Ben Wright, Jack Brown, Don Messick, and John T. Smith. Original musical score was composed by Michel Michelet, with the orchestra under the direction of Michel Perrier. How Sleep the Brave was produced and directed by James W. Talbot.
Our Father, which art in heaven, hallowed be thy name.
This is the United States Armed Forces Radio Service, the voice of information and education.
Give us this day. and forgive us our debts as we forgive our debtors. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil.
You are listening to the Old Time Radio Hour, broadcast each week over the World Wide Web with your host, Justine Ward. Next, we have America's favorite 20th century blowhard, the Great Gildersleeve, getting ready to march in the Memorial Day parade because all the young men are off fighting World War II. His pride is certainly bruised trying to get into his old military uniform, and there are lots of laughs in this look at the home front during the war. The Great Gildersleeve Memorial Day Parade, first broadcast May 30th, 1943 on NBC.
Kraft presents The Great Gildersleeve. Company will also bring you Bing Crosby every Thursday night, but then each week at this time, Harold Perry as The Great Gildersleeve, written by John Wheaton and Sam Moore. We'll hear from The Great Gildersleeve in just a moment. But first, do the men in your family think flavor is the most important virtue of the food you serve? Well, you homemakers know that nutrition is equally important. And that's why Parquet, the quality margarine made by Kraft, is so popular with so many American families. For Parquet margarine is a wonderful red ration stamp value in both flavor and nutrition. It requires just 5 red ration points a pound, and it has a delicate, appetizing flavor that really satisfies. As a spread for bread and a seasoning for hot cooked vegetables, I think you'll agree that Parquet flavor is just about top. Cakes and cookies taste better when made with Parquet margarine, too, because it's a real flavor shortening, and you like it for pan frying because it doesn't spatter or stick to the pan. What's more, Parquet is highly nutritious. In fact, it's one of the best energy foods you can serve, and it's a reliable year-round source of vitamin A. So for flavor, for economy, and for good nutrition, ask your dealer for Parquet, P-A-R-K-A-Y, Parquet margarine, made by Kraft. Now, on to Summerfield and the Great Gildersleeve. It's the last day of May, just 4 weeks before his wedding day, and Gildersleeve is a busy, busy man. This morning, while others make preparations for the Memorial Day exercises, the great man is in his study, straightening out his affairs and clearing the decks for matrimony. So we find him now with pen in hand, laboring over the composition of a mighty document.
I, Throckmorton P. Gildersleeve, being of sound mind and body, do hereby devise and bequeath...
Uncle Mort, excuse me.
Yes, Marjorie?
Come out and see it.
Come out and see what?
The flag. We've got it out.
Oh, well, a little while, my dear. Right now, I'm...
Oh, come on. You aren't doing anything, and it looks so pretty.
Not doing anything, my dear young lady. I happen to be engaged in one of the most solemn duties of a man's lifetime. Do you know what I'm writing?
I think it was your last will and testament. Now, come on.
But, hey, let go.
Come on.
Well, let me put down my pen first. I don't know what there is such a rush about anyway. I've seen the flag before.
But we found a new place for it, and we want you to see it.
Oh, where?
We hung it from the roof.
How did you ever get it up there?
And Leroy climbed out the attic window. Come out in the yard and tell us if you like it.
Well?
We want the place to look nice when the parade goes by.
Oh, and Leela's coming over, too.
Good. So's Ben. And Bertie's planned a wonderful lunch. There. Do you like the flag, Jack?
How does it look to your artistic eye, Uncle?
Well, it looks fine, Leroy, only for heaven's sakes, be careful up there.
Don't worry. Isn't it pretty? I think ours is the prettiest house on the street, don't you?
Yeah, but I wish Leroy would get down off that roof.
Hey, I'm a tightrope walker. Look, everybody. A great Concolino. Leroy,
get off of that railing. Young man, you get in off that roof before I come up there after you.
Are you kidding?
Leroy, you heard me.
Okay, I'm right
now. Yeah, that's what I'm afraid of. Be careful now, my boy.
Oh.
That crazy kid.
What comes over, boy?
I don't know. It's a wonder to me he's lived as long as he has. Oh, that reminds me. I got to get back to work. Hey, call me when it's time for the parade.
Oh, we won't be along for an hour yet.
Parades, tightrope walkers, more interruptions. People just left me alone till I get this will finished. Will. Leroy's the one who should make the will. The great Concolino. Oh, brother. Let me see now. I, Throckmorton P. Gildersleeve, being of sound mind and body, do hereby devise and bequeath to my lawfully wedded wife. No, to my dearly beloved wife. My dearly beloved wife. Come in, beloved.
Hi, Gildy.
Yep, Hooker. What do you want? What on earth are you dressed up for, an admiral?
I'm leading the parade today, Grand Marshal. Just dropped over to ask if you wouldn't join us.
In the parade?
Yeah.
You mean march?
Yes.
On foot?
Well, I suppose you could go on your hands and knees.
Oh, no, Judge. I'm not much on marching. My feet.
You've got to, Gildy. All the younger men are gone this year, and we want them to have a nice turnout.
Well, I guess I can certainly keep up with you, you old goat. I'll tell you, I'll do it on one condition.
What's that?
If you'll help me with my will.
You're drawing up a will?
Sure. Got a little start on it right here.
It's here. I, Throckmorton P. Gildersleeve, being of sound mind and body. Gildy, mind if I ask a question?
What?
What makes you think you're of sound mind?
Huh?
And look at that body.
Yeah. Never mind the priceless wit, Booker. You don't want to help me, don't.
Now, Gildy, I should be delighted to draw up your will for you at any other time. Right now, I've got to get down to City Hall. How about this afternoon?
Well, all right, then.
See you down at the parade. Gildy, there's one thing that just occurred to me.
Yes?
On second thought, you might prefer to have another attorney handle your will for you.
Why, Judge?
Well, I don't like to bring this up, but we're old friends, aren't we, Gildy?
Yes, we are.
We've been through a lot together, haven't we?
Yes, yes, we've been through all that before, too. What's on your mind?
You may not be aware of this, but under the law, it is illegal for persons witnessing or drawing up a will to be beneficiaries. I merely mention this.
Why?
Well, we're such old friends, and we've been through so much together, I just thought if you should want to leave me some slight remembrance.
Judge, I'm going to leave you a lock of my hair.
Hey, Uncle, isn't it about time you were starting for the parade?
Keep your shirt on, my boy. Parades never start on time. Isn't that right, Ben?
I don't know, Mr. Gildersleeve. I thought we were just going to watch it go by the house here.
Well, you are, but I'm going to march in it.
Oh, I didn't know that. What war were you in?
I was in World War I, Ben.
Oh, sure. Did you get to France, Mr. Gildersleeve?
I should say I did, my boy. Paris. I wonder if you'll get over there.
I suppose I might.
Yes. Well, if you do, I wonder if... Leroy, will you go help your sister for a minute?
Help her what? She ain't doing anything.
She's not doing anything.
And that's what I said.
Never mind. Go away. Go upstairs and bring down that picture of me in my uniform so I can show Ben.
Okay.
And tell Marjorie to hurry down here. Ben will walk out of it.
Yeah, fat chance.
What was I saying, Ben?
Something about France, I think.
Oh, yes, yes. If you should get to Paris, my boy, I want you to go to a certain number on a certain street and ask a certain party if she remembers Monsieur Gildersleeve. Beau Yank, she used to call me. Will you look her up, Ben?
Sure, Mr. Gildersleeve, only I can't speak any French to speak of.
Well, when I first met her, I couldn't either. But inside of a week, comme ça va, parlez-vous français, l'amour toujours l'amour. You get the idea?
Oui, oui.
she was a lovely creature, Ben. And her mother. Oh, boy, how she could cook. I think you'll like her, Ben.
Sure.
She's a blonde, just 28 years old in 1918. Let me see, that would make her
53.
It's not possible. Oh, my goodness, how time flies.
Here's the picture, Unc. The boy commando in person.
I don't care to see it now, Leroy. 53, poor Mimi, I can't believe it.
Gosh, Unc, what's the matter?
Nothing. Go help Marjorie.
For Pete's sake, aren't you through talking about Paris?
Leroy, you're getting too fresh. That's Mrs. Ransom. We have a little signal. In here, Leela.
Hello, everybody.
Good morning, sweetheart.
I think the flag out in front looks just beautiful.
Leela, I've got a surprise for you. I'm going to march in the parade.
That's right, Martin. How exciting.
Would you like to see his picture in uniform, Mrs. Ransom?
Leroy, give me that.
Oh, now, Throckmorton, I want to see him. Oh, why, you were cute in your uniform.
Cute?
Wasn't he, Ben?
Well,
just let it go, my boy.
Understand the insignia on your uniform, Throckmorton. Beauregard used to have Leachy on the shoulder.
Leachy? Oh, well, I didn't go into the army at the top. I went in as a private and won my promotion the hard way.
How'd you come out, Unc?
Corporal. Well, I gotta get started if I'm gonna be in the parade. The boys are assembling behind the courthouse at 11. Goodbye, Leela. I'm off to the war.
Oh, wait a minute, Throckmorton.
What's the matter?
You're not going to march in the parade in just that little old business suit, are you?
What else?
Well, your uniform, silly.
Oh, I couldn't, Leela.
Oh, but you'd look so distinguished.
It would look out of date, Leela. The uniforms today are entirely different.
Oh, Throckmorton, you never do anything I ask you.
I do, too, Leela. I just don't know where my uniform is.
I know, Unc. It's up in the attic.
Leroy.
Good for you, Leroy. Please, Throckmorton, for Leela.
All right. Leroy, you come with me. Little sharp eyes. Well, which trunk is it in, Leroy?
This one over here, Unc.
That one? I haven't got the key to that. I guess we'll just have to let the uniform go.
Don't worry, Unc. It's open.
Mothballs. Come on, Leroy. Fish it out of there. I haven't got all day.
Here's the pants. Gosh, they look a little small, Unc.
Well, this stuff shrinks, you know.
Yeah?
Yeah. Besides, mothballs will shrink anything, Leroy. Well, I don't find any puttees in here. Maybe we just better let the pants go.
Okay, here's the coat.
Blouse, Leroy, blouse.
Oh, blouse. Well, anyhow, it looks as if the mothballs cut that down, too.
What did I tell you? Well, I think maybe I can get into it, though. Here, hold my coat.
Okay.
Probably be a little tight, but it'll sort of give a military effect. See? I got it on.
Yeah. Yeah, but can you button it?
Oh, of course. You ought to remember that when I was in France, I weighed several pounds less than I do today.
Are you kidding?
George, it feels good to get back in the old uniform. Come on, Leroy, let's show the ladies. Well, folks, what do you think of it?
Throckmorton, what in the world happened to the trousers?
They were shot off.
Leroy, quiet. No puttees, Leela. Can't wear them without puttees.
Oh, well, the coat looks awfully military. I think you'll be the handsomest man in the whole parade. I honestly do.
Oh, well, that's all I wanted to know, Leela. Well, I'm off. I kiss your hand, fair lady.
Oh, don't bend over.
Well, I'm glad I didn't try to wear the pants.
The Great Gildersleeve will be with us again in a few seconds. Meanwhile, instead of saying more about parquet, the quality margarine made by Kraft, I'd like to say right here and now, hats off to the man who sells parquet, your neighborhood grocer. If point rationing is causing you occasional headaches, remember that rationing is a major problem for your grocer hundreds of times each day. In fact, he deserves real credit if his disposition isn't tattered and worn, what with getting to work so early in the morning to arrange his stock for you and working far into the night every night to sort his stamps and plan his ordering. He has endless records and reports to fill out, too. Yes, your food dealer is an important workman on the home front, and he merits the help and the cooperation of all of us. You see, most of the foods he buys and sells are rationed to him, too. He has to budget his ration stamps in order to buy many of the things you buy from him. So why not help yourself and help him at the same time by planning family menus several days in advance and by shopping early in the week and early in the day? Your friend the grocer will appreciate it. Get back to the great Gildersleeve. Clad in a conservative business suit, he's marched valiantly in the hot sun, and now he's arriving at his home to claim the soldier's reward. In this case, a share of the delicious lunch which Bertie's promised. But our hero's a little late, and the house seems strangely quiet.
Marjorie! Leroy!
Where is everybody?
Is that you, Mr. Gildersleeve?
Of course it's me, Bertie. Where is everybody?
Well, they're waiting for you, Mr. Gildersleeve. They waited about 2 hours before they had lunch. You've been marching all this time?
Oh, yes, Bertie. I march so far, my feet are killing me. And I'm so hungry, I don't care.
Well, you just sit down and take your shoes off, Mr. Gildersleeve, and I'll warm up a nice lunch for you right away.
Thank you, Bertie.
How come you marched so long, Mr. Gildersleeve?
Well, it wasn't all marching, Bertie. We stood there in the park for a couple of hours listening to the speeches. But it certainly was impressive. Makes a man think, Bertie.
Yes, sir.
I'd like to be remembered by everyone as a man who did something for the city.
Well, sir, you're the head man at the waterworks.
Well, I'm Summerfield's 16th water commissioner, yes. But a few years from now, who'll know it? That's what I've been thinking about some sort of a monument for, Bertie.
You mean like a statue?
Well, I don't know. You think that'd be good?
Oh, no, sir. I don't care much for statues. Now, you take them two statues in the park. Every time I walk past Abraham Lincoln standing there, I feel sorry for him.
Why?
Because he's been standing there so long.
Yes. What about the statue of General Fremont? Don't you like that?
No, sir. Every time I go past that, I get mad.
But why?
Because he's got a horse and I'm walking. And he ain't even going nowhere.
Yeah, you're right. I'm afraid you just don't like sculpture, though, Bertie.
Oh, yes, I do, Mr. Gildersleeve. You know what I like?
What?
That fountain in front of the courthouse with the water spraying down and the goldfish swimming around down below. I like that.
So do I. By George, a fountain, Bertie. For a water commissioner, what could be better? With a little bronze plaque on it. Not too little. Let's see. This fountain presented to the city by Summerfield's 16th water commissioner, Throckmorton P. Gildersleeve. Then maybe some short, dignified statement like, he served his fellow townsmen well.
Sounds mighty pretty, Mr. Gildersleeve.
Yes, sir. I can hear the water splashing in the fountain right now.
So can I. Oh, my goodness, the gravy's boiling over.
Yeah. Gravy? Bertie, I'm starving.
Well, hang on, Mr. Gildersleeve. You can't starve to death till you get that monument.
Yeah, you're right, Bertie. I'm going to have Judge Hooker put in that fountain in my will right now.
Doc Morton, let me ask you something. Why are you suddenly in such a sweat to make a will after letting it go all this time?
Well, for one thing, I think it's a man's duty to make a will, for one thing.
Yeah? What else?
Well, Leela mentioned it once or twice.
Oh.
And anyhow, I think it's a man's duty. You can't tell. Things can happen. Here I am about to get married.
Gildy, it strikes me that you're preparing for marriage as if you were preparing for the next world.
Now, see here, Hooker. That's not true.
All right. Sorry. Sorry. True, but I shouldn't have said it.
Yes.
I'm sorry. If I'm to draw up this will, I'm going to require certain information.
Such as what?
Well, to begin with, how much money have you got?
Yeah. Don't you wish you knew?
Well, I've got to know.
What for?
Gildy, if you want me to help you with your will, you've got to take me into your confidence.
Well, all right, Judge. What do you want to know?
I ask you, how much money have you got?
None of your business. I tell you, you'll tell everybody in town.
Gildy, what passes between a lawyer and his client is strictly confidential. You know that. Come on now. How much have you got?
Cash.
Cash.
Well, in the neighborhood of $500.
In the neighborhood?
Yes. Small neighborhood, isn't it?
It's all right, Gildy. We're neighbors.
Oh, you too?
I'd be lucky if I could put my hands on $300 right now.
Well, to be perfectly frank with you, Judge, I've got just $275. And that's not counting the bills that'll be pouring in tomorrow.
Isn't it terrible?
Terrible, the way things are. A man's lucky if he can stay out of jail.
Now, let's see. The insurance. Now, what about the rest? What about Leela? Of course, she has her own money.
Yes. I'll tell you what I thought, Horace. I thought it'd be nice to endow a small memorial.
A memorial?
Yeah, a fountain, perhaps. A memorial fountain.
Memorial to what?
Well, to the two of us. Me being water commissioner, I think a fountain would be kind of appropriate, don't you? You know, with water coming out.
Throckmorton, may I ask what you propose to endow this fountain with?
Well, with my residuary estate. With the $275. Don't you think you could buy a fountain for that?
Wouldn't be any Niagara. I think you'd be lucky to get a bird bath.
Oh. You do, huh? Well, you know, Judge, you may think you're joking, but a bird bath isn't such a bad idea.
Oh, now, Gildy.
I mean it. I've always been fond of birds. Birds like me, too. They come right up to me sometimes. And Leela, well, Leela's crazy about birds. She's got a little bitty wren that's building a nest in her front porch right now. Every morning she goes out and peeks at it. Yes, sir, a man could do worse than have the birds remember him. Birds are man's truest friend.
I thought dogs were man's truest friend.
I'm not building any dog bath. Horace, how soon could you get this will drawn up?
Well, that shouldn't take much time. Of course, we need witnesses. I guess I'd get my secretary for one.
Oh, and Peavy. Peavy, do it. I know he's open this afternoon because Leroy's working for him. Hey, do you think you could get it ready?
What's the rush?
Well, I'd just like to have it, Judge. I'm going over to Leela's tonight, and I'd sort of like to surprise her with it.
You'll surprise her, all right. Hello, Leroy. How's the drug business?
Pretty quiet. The chief is out in the prescription room, and you know what that means.
What? Leroy, that's no way to talk about Mr. Peavy. I'd like to see him for a moment, please.
Oh, gosh, Ron, can't I wait on you? I never get a chance to sell medicine. But with you, it wouldn't matter if I made a mistake.
I disagree, my boy.
Oh, just try me, Unc. I can find you anything in the store. Practically.
Then find Mr. Peavy.
Honest, Unc, the chief doesn't like it if I bother him about something I can handle myself.
Leroy.
What?
Wake up the chief.
Oh, all right.
Maybe we shouldn't bother Peavy if he wants to sleep.
What nonsense. Peavy sleeps 24 hours a day anyway. Oh, hello, Peavy. I hope we didn't interrupt anything important.
No, I'll just take care of you, gentlemen, and then I can get right back to it. How are you, Judge?
Fine, thank you, Peavy.
I saw you, gentlemen, in the parade this morning. Thought you both looked very dashing.
Well, glad to do our bit, Peavy. How does it happen you weren't marching? Someone told me you were an ex-soldier.
Yes, sir, I was in the artillery. 49th Field Artillery, USA.
Well, I'll be darned. Were you a gunner?
No, I wasn't a gunner. I was in what you might call the transportation end of the artillery.
Oh, what's that?
I commanded a platoon of mules.
You? That's hard to believe, Peavy. Why, the mule is the stubbornest animal known to man.
Well, I wouldn't say that. Although a mule has a mind of his own, I'll admit. But they're hard workers.
They are?
Yes, they're hard workers. And they're loyal. Every mule in my platoon was just as loyal as a jackass could be.
Gildersleeve, can't we get down to business here? I haven't time to listen to Peavy's military experiences.
I'm sorry, Johnny. I'm just going on. What can I do for you?
Well, you won't make a penny on it, Peavy. We just want you to witness Mr. Gildersleeve's will, if you don't mind.
Thank you, Judge. Glad to be of service. Oh, Leroy.
Yes, Chief?
This is the type of service I was telling you about yesterday. Institutional type.
Oh, yes.
Have you got the document with you, Mr. Gildersleeve?
Right here, Petey.
Get away, Leroy. This is none of your business.
Unc, did you leave me anything?
You've been amply provided for. Sign right here, Petey.
Unc, will you leave me your pistol that's in your bureau drawer?
No.
Oh, please, Unc.
Now, Leroy, remember lesson one. The customer is always right.
Sorry, Chief. I forgot.
All right. Now, here, Judge.
That's it.
Richard, Petey. Here you are, Mr. Gildersleeve, and I hope your will gives you the same lasting satisfaction as mine is giving me.
Well, I hope so, too.
I executed my will in 1913, naming my wife as sole beneficiary, and I've never wanted to change a syllable of it. Neither has Mrs. Peavy.
Well, I can imagine. Well, much obliged, Peavy. We got to be running along now.
Oh, I'm going to close up here myself in a minute. Leroy, you want to go along now with your uncle?
Are you sure you can spare me?
I think so.
All right, I'll see you tomorrow. Good night, Chief.
Good night, little beaver.
But soon, there'll just be two of us. Soon, you and I will borrow the moon. For just the two of us, sweetly and so discreetly, we'll be completely alone. No other world, only our own. Now we must be contented with schemes about the two of us. Yes, we can have our sweet scented dreams that will come true of us, for presently and pleasantly our hearts will be in tune. So soon, maybe not tomorrow, Leela, but soon.
Martin.
I made my will today, Leela.
Oh, did you, darling? How nice.
Yeah, have it right here in my pocket. Leela, you know something?
What, darling?
Guess who's in my will?
Oh, I couldn't.
Go on, Leela. Guess, will you?
Oh, I couldn't possibly. I'm too happy to guess. I'm too happy to care about anything.
Well, then I'll tell you, darling.
Yes, you tell me.
You know that little bird that has a nest in your porch? You know the one that sings under your window every morning?
Oh, Dicky Bird. I call him Dicky Bird.
Yeah, Dicky Bird. Now, Dicky Bird has been provided for, Leela. It's all right here in the will.
Oh, Throckmorton, that's just like you to remember little birds.
See? It's all written out right here.
Oh, darling, you have to explain it to me. I don't understand about wills and complicated things like that.
Oh. Well, sweetheart, in memory of both of us, I'm leaving money for a municipal bird bath.
Oh, really, Throckmorton? You're the most thoughtful man. Now, did you say bird bath?
Yes, dear.
You're leaving your money for a bird bath?
That's right, honey.
All of it?
Well, not all of it. All that's left after taking care of the children.
You mean to stand there and tell me you've made a bird your residuary legatee?
Leela, I thought you didn't know anything about wills.
Well, I wasn't married to a lawyer 7 years for nothing.
But, sweetheart, I thought you liked birds.
I do, Throckmorton, but you're nothing but a cuckoo.
Over a bird. Leela,
Can't you take a little joke?
You mean you were joking?
Of course, darling. I'm not going to build any bird bath. Tell me, how would you invest the money?
Well, when I'm in doubt about a financial problem, I always ask myself, what would Beauregard do?
Beauregard? Well, have you asked Beauregard what I should do about this?
No, but I think I know what he'd say.
What?
He'd say, Leela, child, you'd look lovely in a mink coat.
Good night, everybody.
On this program was under the direction of Claude Sweetin. This is Ken Carpenter speaking for the Kraft Cheese Company, inviting you to listen again next Sunday for the further adventures of the Great Gildersleeve.
You women are looking for extender recipes these days and all kinds of ways to make the less plentiful foods go further. Well, do you know about the product called Kraft Dinner? All by itself, a package of Kraft Dinner gives you a swell macaroni and cheese main dish fast. Enough macaroni and cheese for four people. And for it, you put out just one single red ration point. Now, if you have a little meat or some leftover chicken or seafood, you can extend it by adding it to the Kraft Dinner macaroni and cheese. Or you can mold the hot Kraft Dinner into a ring and in the center serve your small amount of meat or what have you, creamed. Each package of Kraft Dinner holds a quick cooking macaroni and some Kraft grated to put cheese flavor through and through the fluffy macaroni in a jiffy. Get some soon so that you can cook a macaroni and cheese dish in 7 minutes or use it as an extender of less plentiful foods. Remember, it's Kraft Dinner. The program has reached you from Hollywood. This is the National Broadcasting Company.
You have been listening to the Old Time Radio Hour, broadcast each week over the World Wide Web. You can subscribe at no charge through Apple Podcasts, Podbean, or RSS. And we're now on YouTube. Thank you so much for listening. We hope you can join us again next week for another hour of entertainment from the golden age of radio. Until then, this is your host, Justine Ward, saying so long for a while.